Boker Tov to everybody. Welcome back. Even though we haven't consciously taken any time out, the nature of the calendar this year has been such that Wednesday morning seems to have been Erev everything. Erev Chag, Erev in the middle of Chol HaMoed, etc. But Baruch Hashem, we're now back. I must say that that's a little bit temporary for me because recruiting season for me is just about to begin. So I will be in and out a little bit over the next few months, well, until the end of December, really. But we have a few weeks together still before I have to go off to America, and we have what I hope will be a very interesting topic for them. A special welcome goes to my parents. You've been following the saga of my parents' Aliyah. I've been mentioning it as I've been going along. So thank God they are now here as Yisraelim Chadashim, and they'll show you their Tudot Zahut with pride. And it's lovely to have them here. Hopefully they'll be able to be here more often. They're going to be in Netanya, so hopefully they'll be sitting by the sea a little bit as well. But if they're here, then of course they'll always be welcome. And another on a very different note, unfortunately one of our family friends and my parents' friends passed away yesterday, and I'd like to dedicate the shir Le'ilu Nishmato, Gedaliah Ben Chaya. I don't have his father's name, but the Sfardim always follow the mother's name anyway. Not that he's Sfardi or I'm Sfardi, but that's good enough. Sfardim are good enough for me. Gedaliah Ben Chaya, please God, the shir should be an Ilui Neshama, and we should learn in his chutz. This topic, which I'd like to deal with this week and next week, is a difficult topic. It's a painful topic, but it's a very important topic, and it's a very interesting topic, which is the issue of disgraced rabbis. And not just rabbis, we'll see with focusing on Torah teachers and leaders, but the way we deal with any senior people in the community who are who do not live up to the standards that we expect of them. And obviously anyone who's listening to the news almost any time, but certainly at the moment, the issue of different kinds of abuse by different figures in different fields has been very prevalent over the last few days and weeks. Obviously, I'm not here to deal with any specific situation, and I won't mention any specific situation. Certainly, I won't mention any names. That's not helpful or useful. Those who know, know, and those who don't know probably don't need to know in this forum. But I will be talking about lots of different types of issues and seeing how the sources deal with them. This is nothing new. We'll see soon a number of key sources in the Gemara specifically deal with this issues of rabbis who do not live up to the standards that we want, and not even that, but even the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im we'll see right now also talk about this. So this is not a new thing. That doesn't mean that it's okay that it's not a new thing, but it's certainly not something that we're just coming across now. So let's make an introduction and then see where the sources take us. The first thing I think we need to say is, Baruch Hashem, most people in the world are good. Most people in the Jewish community are good, and most people in the rabbinic leadership that we have are wonderful leaders who live up to our expectations, forces for the good, impressive people who work on themselves, help their communities to grow. It's important not to get it out of context. The context is one of which most of the people that we know and look up to are worthy of that respect. However, things can go wrong, and religious leaders can fall often very far short of the standards that we expect. And a number of questions come up. Let's talk through the questions. Some of them I'll deal with this week, and some of them, please God, next week. Can we continue to learn in the future Torah, which has been taught by rabbis who have been disgraced and teachers who have been disgraced? Do we have to take those books off the bookshelves? I have quite a few books on my bookshelves, unfortunately, of people that I wouldn't necessarily recommend going to their shiurim right now, even if they could give shiurim, which some of them can't anymore because they're otherwise detained. But the question is, do I have to take those books off the bookshelf? It's a serious question, or can I leave them on because the Torah is good Torah? What about svarim? What about lectures? What about recordings? Do we have to rub everything out? Do we have to ignore everything we learned? If a woman went for kala classes, or a man went for chatan classes with someone who is later exposed as a bad individual in different ways, does that mean they have to go to new classes? Do they have to assume that everything they learned, well, I went to chatan classes with such and such a person, maybe I have to do it all over again, even if I've been married for 10 years? Is that the case? What about the food certified by rabbis that are disgraced? Is that food not kosher anymore? What about the converts? Converted by authorities where one of the senior people has since been exposed as inappropriate behavior, are those people still Jewish? that's a very tricky one. Is there any distinction between what they taught before they went off and what they taught after they went off? Do we make that distinction? And how do we relate to tshuva? Is it possible for people to do tshuva? That I'm going to deal with next week. We believe in tshuva, in principle. But in these particular cases, do people get a second chance? Do we believe in reinstating individuals after they've fallen short of our expectations? And does the nature of what they did make a distinction? So let me give you some examples. Not all behavior is the same, and not all inappropriate or bad or even evil behavior, it's not all the same. You can't just put it all in the same category. Just give you five or six different examples of things that can go wrong. Some cases, clearly, which is have been talked about a lot in the community, are cases where people who have been exposed as being predatory sexual offenders, often against vulnerable victims, often against children. That's one kind of behavior that we've seen that people have been found to have committed. There's other behavior which is sexually abusive. That's obviously been in the news a lot recently. Sexually abusive behavior that betrays the trust of people that put their trust, often younger students, younger Talmidim, Talmidot, young men, young women, who were unable to pull themselves out of situations. That's one kind of behavior that we see. There are other quite different behaviors where we see the rabbis give in to their yetzer hara. We'll see soon. No one expects the rabbis have no yetzer hara. Everybody knows that every human being is tempted to do different things which are wrong. People have yetzer hara for money and are found to have embezzled or stolen. Some people have yetzer hara for sexual relationships in a non-abusive, in a consensual way. People run off with this one, with that one. As you get older, you come across more and more scenarios that you've seen. There are other people who are exposed as having negative personal midot. People who are shown to have been lying, deceiving, maybe making up sources, misleading people on what the sources are. Or people who are arrogant or into their own covert. What about that case? There are people who have unacceptable halachic and hashkafic views. And this is where it gets a bit tricky, of course, because, you know, my views and his views and her views, everyone thinks that their views are the normative views and everyone is either a heretic or a fanatic. But what about people who, in an extreme case, just cease to be religiously observant? There are rabbis that are no longer observant at all. What do we do with their Torah? And other examples as well, people who have a failure in professional judgment, how far does that go? So let's have a look at some of the sources right now. And we'll see how that works. It's always been a question in my mind on the last point. How do we deal with different kinds of inappropriate behavior? Am I more likely to take a book off the shelf of a rabbi who is found to have been deceptive with his learning or his sources, or a rabbi who turns out stole money? Or does it not make any difference? Does the fact that he turned out to have been a bad individual somehow sully the Torah, make the Torah pagum? We'll deal with that more next week. Or do I say, no, just the fact that he stole money, he stole money. I'm not defending it or excusing it, but that doesn't mean he can't learn a Rambam, as opposed to the guy that was exposed for misleading people with sources. Maybe that does. So we'll see all of this. Let's have a look in Moed Katan. Moed Katan is the place to start, at the bottom of page one. The Gemara deals with a rabbi that went off, but didn't deal with specifically what he did. We'll see in a minute different opinions on that. Hahu Tzur ben Rabbanan. There was one rabbi, rabbinic figure, to have a sanu shmuane. His reputation was solid. And Rashi rather, you know, enigmatically says, sheyotzim alav shmuot ra'ot. Bad things were being said about him. We'll see soon what they were. So what should we do with this rabbi? I'm a Rabbi Yehuda. Hey Chilavid, Rabbi Yehuda said, what should we do? This is a case that happened in the Gemara. L'shamkei, should we put him in cheirim and throw him out? Maybe we should do that. But Srichi Le Rabbanim, but the Jewish world needs him. And this is part of the dilemma. Sometimes the people who go off are senior figures, Rosh Yeshiva, or people that others look up to, or influential figures. Do we just throw them under the bus? How do we do that? Especially in the time of the Gemara, where an individual, where Torah was mostly oral, and an individual may be an extremely important resource in terms of a certain area of Torah. They couldn't just run off and look it up in a book. So what do we do with such people when we really need them? Do we put them in cheirim? Loy l'shamteis. But how can we not put them in cheirim? How can we not throw them out? K'mitchel shama d'shamaya. They're a chilul Hashem. The Gemara raises the point directly. They're chilul Hashem. I don't care how much we need them. If they desecrate the name of Judaism, how can we continue to have these people as our leaders? And the Gemara has that as a dilemma. Amalei Rabba Barbachana. So Rabbi Yehuda turns around in this dilemma to Rabba Barbachana and say, have you ever heard anything on this topic? Do you have any guidance for us? What should we do with this rabbi? Should we get rid of him or should we not get rid of him? Amalei, so Rabba Barbachana says to him, I have something to tell you. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said the following on the third line of source one. My dichtev, and he brings a pasuk from Malachi, ki sivtei kohen yishmeru das, the lips of the kohen, who are the rabbinic leadership in the time of the temple period, the lips of the kohen will teach us knowledge, the Torah, yavakshu mipihu, and seek Torah from their mouths, ki malach Hashem tzevakodu, because they are a malach, the kohen is a malach, and therefore see an angel, seek Torah from them. If the rabbi, if the teacher is like a malach, is like an angelic figure, then you can go learn Torah from them. But if they're not like an angel, then don't learn Torah from him. It's a very interesting question. Who is like an angel?
What is meant
by being like an angel? It could be, if you ask my parents, they'll think I'm like an angel, because that's what they do. Okay? I can assure you that's biased. That's not true. Okay? But who is like an angel? And what kind of a standard is that? By the way, you should know, people often forget, the context of those verses in Malachi is exactly that context. Malachi is laying in to the Levium, laying into the Kohanim and saying, you are the leadership of the Jewish people and look how you behave. The whole context of the Psukim in Malachi is disgraced rabbis of the time who were the Kohanim. And he says, you have to be a Malach in order to qualify as a Torah leader. So what did Rabbi Yehuda do? He put the guy in Cherem, Shamte Rabbi Yehuda. He threw him out. He excommunicated him. He said, that's it. I don't care if we need you. You're out. Lesof, sometime later, Ichlash Rabbi Yehuda became sick. And the rabbis came to ask after him to visit him. And this rabbi who had been put in Cherem came with the other rabbis to visit the rabbi who put him in Cherem. Not a recipe for a happy meeting. When Rabbi Yehuda saw this rabbi that he'd thrown out, he smiled, he laughed. So Amalei, so the guy said to him, the one who'd been thrown out, Loim itzayich de shamti lahu gavre, it's not enough you put me in Cherem. Now you're mocking me? You threw me out, now you're laughing in my face? Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda said to him, I'm not laughing at you. But I know now, I realize when I go to the next world, Vadicha daisai. My mind will be laughing. I'll be happy. I'll be proud of myself. Why? Da'afilu legavra kavatech. That even a man as important as you, loichanichile. I wasn't pressured not to sack you, not to fire you. Meaning there was a chanufa. I had so much community pressure on me to cover it up, not to go to the authorities, whatever it is. I'm proud of myself, says Rabbi Yehuda, that I stood up to my principles and I threw you out. That's why I'm laughing. It's not at you, it's not personal. I'm just happy with my own behavior. Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, right. So you see from here that Chazal took very seriously the issue of rabbinic bad behavior, misbehavior. Although we'll see there are more sources, it's not as straightforward as everything, as people sometimes make out. But when a rabbi needs to be dismissed, or removed, then that has to happen. What does it mean that a rabbi has to be like a malach? Let's look at this for a second. Nobody in the world is perfect. I hate to break it to you. Nobody. Not even your rabbi. Number two. Look at this. It's very interesting. Gemara in Sanhedrin. Completely different type of discussion, but you'll see where it connects. Amar Rabba Babachana. Interesting, the same individual. He reports this. Rabba Babachana reports this teaching. Kashachala Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, who lived a couple of hundred years before the story we saw before, when he got sick, Nichlasu Talmid of Levakro, the rabbis came in to visit Rabbi Eliezer. Hitchilu Heimbochem, they saw him Nebach. It was a Nebach. Rabbi Eliezer was sick in bed, presumably dying, and they cried. They started to cry. But Rabbi Akiva Mesachik, Rabbi Akiva started laughing. Now, you've probably heard similar accounts where the same groups with Rabbi Akiva. He's always the kind of countercultural. You know, everyone's crying, and he's laughing, and of course, what's going to come next? They're going to say, why are you laughing? And he's going to say, why are you crying? So that's exactly what happens. Just like the famous Gemara at the end of Makkos, where they're walking, looking over Har HaBayis. Fine. So Amru Hoy, they said to him, first line of number two, Lama Atam Shachet? What's there to laugh about? Our Rebbe is sick, deathly sick. Amalahem Vakimi Pnei Ma'atem Bochit. So why are you crying? Amru Hoy, they said to him, Evsha Sefer Torah Shrui Basar. Can we look at a Sefer Torah, a walking Sefer Torah, a living embodiment of Torah in such pain? The Lord Nivka, how can we not cry? It's tragic. So Amalahem, he said to them, Lakachani Masachet. That's why I'm laughing. Why? What can he possibly have to laugh about? And he says, Kol Zman She'ani Roi Rebbe. I've known Rebbe Lezer, says Rebbe Kiva, all my life. Whenever I see him, I notice She'ein Yeino Machmit. His wine never goes sour. Ve'ein Pishdan Aloke. And his flax never gets spoiled. Ve'ein Sh'man Ho'imavish. His oil never goes off. Ve'ein Dushan Ho'imavish. And his honey never goes sour. Nothing ever goes wrong. He's like the Midas touch. You know, everything he does turns to gold. Amarti, I always thought to myself, oi, Shema chas v'sholem kibel rebi olam oi. Maybe he doesn't have olam haba. Maybe he has no olam haba to go to. Maybe he's getting it all in this world. He's getting all his reward in this world. And by the way, there's context here, because Rebbe Eliezer himself was put into cheirem as well, because of his views. And that's a whole different story, not because of his behavior. His behavior was impeccable, but his views were deemed to be inappropriate. He wouldn't accept the majority sack of the Sanhedrin. But that's a separate story. I'm sure it connects. So Rabbi Akiva said, I was always worried that he was getting paid off in this world. Achshav she'ani roev, Rabbi Bitzar, that now I see Nebuch, that he also is suffering in this world. Ani sameach, I'm happy. I'm not happy that he's suffering, but I'm happy at least that I know that there's an olam haba. It's very interesting because we're troubled by the fact that bad things happen to good people. He was troubled by the fact that good things happen to good people. Interesting perspective.
Yeah,
he's saying, I'm bothered by the fact that the good people have a good life, because that worries me. Right, exactly. Different perspective on life. So Amar Loi, so Rabbi Eliezer, who's sick, he heard this conversation, probably not a good idea. And he says to Rabbi Akiva, Akiva! He says to him, what are you telling me? Did you ever see me not do anything? Like I'm now getting punished for my sins in this world. What did you ever see me sin? What did you ever see me do? So Amaloi, so Rabbi Kiva turns around to his Rebbe and says, are you not the one that taught us, famous Pasuk Kohelet, ki Adam ein tzadik ba'aretz asher yaseh tov v'lo yechetah. There's nobody in the world who is a tzadik, who never did a sin. So even if I never saw you, you did something wrong, because everybody does something wrong. Now you might say, from the Pasuk, I say, yes, it's tov v'lo yechetah. Maybe that he didn't do something which was an aveira, but in the way he did his mitzvahs, when he was doing good, maybe he didn't do it the right way, etc. But nobody's perfect. In fact, even the greatest of the great, the Torah doesn't cover up the sins of our great leaders. Number three, Gemara and Shabbos. This whole daf of Gemara and Shabbos is dealing with people in Tanakh who behave in an apparently inexcusable way. It goes through the whole list there. You probably know the Gemara, David HaMelech. Did he do what it looks like he did with Bathsheba and Uriah and Pinchas and the sons of Shmuel, Pinchas and Chofni and all of these people. So he says here, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af Moshe and Aaron b'chata'am metu. Even Moshe and Aaron died because of their sins. Shinema ya'an loye mantin, because God says to them, you didn't believe in me. On whatever level they did that sin, they also had that sin. Arba meishu be'et yoshel nachash. There were only four individuals. It's a very short list of individuals who never sinned, who died only because of the snake, because of the fact that death is in the world. The Elohim, Binyamin ben Yaakov, Amram Abi Moshe, Yishai Abi David, and Kilav ben David. David's father, David's son, Moshe's father Amram, and Binyamin the Shevet. They are the only four individuals. Everybody else, including all of the people you look up to as rabbis, everybody had a sin in their life. In fact, not only that, but in number four, the Gemara in Sukkah says, Kolak Godul Mechaveru Yitzro Godul Heimenu. The greater a person is, the greater their Yetzahara is. Yitzro Shal Adam Mitzgabe Alav B'chol Yom. And a person's Yetzahara is constantly working on them. Shenei Ma'ar, as it says, possibly from this week's Parshas Noach. Vayar Hashem ki rabba rata adam ba'aretz ki yo kol yetzer v'chol yetzer machshavot libo rak kol hayom. People are people. Humans are weak, and there is no way we can avoid that reality. But of course there's different kinds of sin. When it says that a great person has a great yetzer hara, greater evil inclination, the Rambam already in Shmona Prochim says, well, it depends on what he's attracted to. There are certain averas which it's normal and natural to be attracted to. You know, you want to eat cheeseburgers in McDonald's, okay? So maybe big people have big yetzaharas for cheeseburgers. That's like a healthy yetzahara, if you like. It's a normal yetzahara. But there's a Rambam there in if you have yetzaharas to, you know, murder and rape people, God forbid, like that, you need a lot of professional help. You're a sick, evil person. That's not the same kind of yetzahara as this. Meaning, it's different kind of yetzaharas. It's not just all in the same category. But I hope that everyone understands that perfection, being a malach, mamash, being a real malach, is not something you can ever expect of a rabbinic figure, and I think we all knew that. So what does it mean? So look at the Rambam. The Rambam passes this halacha, and again he leaves us with a slight lack of clarity. Number 5. He passes halacha in Moikon, that your rav has to be a malach, and see how he writes it. V'chein harav she'eina holech b'derech tovah. He doesn't go in a good way. He doesn't follow the right path. He doesn't define what that means. Afal pisha chacham gadol, even though he may be a very wise individual who, v'chol ha'am tzrichim lo, and all the people need this rabbi, he's very important. Look how many people he's been, done outreach with, or taught, or whatever. Ein mitlamdim mimenu. Now, this interesting lehitlamed is an interesting word. Lehitlamed, what's lehitlamed? You shouldn't be taught by him. He doesn't say ein loimdim mimenu. We don't learn from him. Although the Shulchan Aruch Hussi does say ein loimdim mimenu, but I haven't seen any commentary on this. I wonder whether that word lehitlamed means has some impact on the decision, on the discussion. Ah, tshuva lemutav, until he does tshuva. The Rambam expects that if he does tshuva, then that will be sufficient. Although we'll have to see what does it mean to do tshuva. Just standing up and apologizing is not sufficient in many cases. Shenemar, and he brings the pasuk, he says, "Kain yishmeru das, v'tori yivashim yipiyu, ki malach Hashem tzevakot hu." We saw in Malachi. Amru chachamim, im harav, doyme lamalach Hashem tzevakot, tori yivashim yipiyu, v'im lav al yivashim tori yipiyu. So again, he says, your rav has to be a malach, but he just says that means he must go in a derech tovah. He must go in a good way. What does that mean? So Chazal, if you remember, quoted the definition was Chilul Hashem. Rav Yehuda in the Gemara Moed Katan says, how can we not throw him out? He's been a Chilul Hashem. What is a Chilul Hashem? So that is also an interesting question. At what point do you say this person has committed a Chilul Hashem? And the Gemara at the end of Yuma wants to ask this question directly. Have a look in number 6. Heichi Dami Chilul Hashem. What indeed is Chilul Hashem? I'm a Rav. Could go in honest. A Rav says, for someone like me, Isha clean of bitzra mitapcha, if I pick up meat in the butchers, the lo yavinu dmela alta, and I don't pay immediately, and I ask for credit, and I mess them around with payment, that's a chilul Hashem. A rabbi who doesn't pay his bills on time. So for someone like me, that's a chilul Hashem. Okay. So does that mean every rabbi who never paid his bills or his school fees or whatever on time, that's it? You're out? You're finished? Okay. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Rabbi Yochanan says, Kegoin Ana, for someone like me, De Masagne Arba Amos Beloy Torah Beloy Tefillin. If I even walk 4 steps, 4 Amos, without teaching Torah and wearing Tefillin, that's a Chilul Hashem. Oi! You know, if you're going to get rid of all the rabbis who don't walk 4 steps without teaching Torah and wearing Tefillin, you're going to have a very small bookshelf. Okay. My wife will be delighted with a smaller bookshelf, I must tell you. But that's a very high bar. Yitzchak debei Rabbi Yanai Amar. Yitzchak from the school of Rabbi Yanai said, no. Here we're talking about something much more normal. Kol shechaverav mitzvayshim machmad shmuato. If his rabbinic colleagues would be embarrassed by that behavior. Now that's an interesting definition because that may depend on the individual, it may depend on the times, but if the individual does something that causes embarrassment within the rabbinic establishment, that's called a Chilul Hashem. Hey Chidami, could that be? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Kagoin de Ka'amri Inshi, when people start to say, Oi, Shara Le Mari Le Ploini, may God forgive him for such terrible behavior. When people start to talk, when people believe it, when it becomes something which is accepted, that is behavior which is considered a Chilul Hashem. And I think that's the definition that we're using. We'll see the Shulchan Aruch uses that. We don't expect every rabbi to be walking with tefillin and teaching Torah the whole time. And, you know, it's interesting, different kind of averas have a different effect on public perception. even an aveir which is technically more serious may not be such a disgrace. For example, if you heard one day that a rabbi you looked up to, you heard one day he spoke Lashon Hara about somebody. That's a very serious aveira. But I don't think anyone would turn around and say, he spoke Lashon Hara about somebody, that's it. I don't want anything to do with him anymore. I'm divesting. Or maybe that's sad, in a sense. Maybe it's not a good thing. Or if you hear that your rabbi double parks when he buys challah, on Friday, Berman's Bakery, oi, that's gazeta, all right, sir. We'll cut the rabbinic establishment down a bit if that's the standard. So we'll see that it's not so straightforward, just the technical nature of the Avera. The Ritva comes and he identifies, what did this rabbi do in Moed Cotton that we wanted to throw him out? And it's interesting that it's always been, sexual issues have always been high on the agenda. This is not new. Look in number 7. Davasani Shmuane. Says the Ritva, Perish, what did this rabbi do? Shehaya Porotz Ksat Bezima. He was sexually immodest. He used to put himself in seclusion with young women. And that is a very unacceptable behavior for a rabbinic leader like that. Meaning, I don't even know if he did anything with these people. We don't even know what happened. But the fact is, he's suspected. He's been in a place behind closed doors with people, and he's now open to accusations. It's amazing how contemporary, in a way, this Gemara is. Meaning, I'm someone who's been involved in different kinds of establishments in teaching, and quite a few of the people I teach are young women. And now, there's been a lot of efforts made to try and make a lot of transparency. People have to meet during office hours, never after office hours, and all doors in all rooms have large windows, so people are always walking past. And we think, oh, this is because we're now newly conscious of the truth is, maybe we should have always been conscious of this, because he says, even though this man was in yichud with women, we don't know what he did, he was together with them, but he may have done nothing. But that doesn't matter. The fact is that he was under suspicion, and that's a chilul Hashem. Rashi over the page on page 3 goes one step further. Desani Shmuane, Rashi says, Sheyota alav Shmuas Rod, there were even rumors going out about him, okay, of Snuot, Shehu Noef, that he even maybe had an affair with somebody. But again, it's rumors, but nevertheless, we have to remove him from his position. Now, at the end of the shir, I want to deal with the question as well. Come on, rumors. Anyone can make an accusation against anyone. You can't just destroy someone's life because somebody turns around and says, such a certain person did this. That's not acceptable. Although we see that is what happens in many cases. And that's why even the halacha is in many ways not sufficient to protect people, because someone I know gave a ride to a young woman, a tramp in around Gush Etzion, a young man, a young woman, and the story I heard was that when she got out of the car at the stop he was dropping off, she said, if you don't give me 500 shekels, I'm going to go to the police and say that you touched me. Wow. So he said, so get lost, go to the police. And she went to the police. And the police brought him in, and they opened a tick, and of course there was no proof, but now there's a tick open. And you tell over that story, and the truth is, you don't really know. Was he telling the truth? Was she telling the truth? Because it could really go either way. And that's the problem that we have in life. And what does that mean? That means you should never pick anybody up. You should never pick anybody up if there's a potential. You should ask people to sit in the back. These are issues that one has to deal with very seriously, and they always have been issues.
Leave the car door open.
Leave the car open while you're driving. That's the Israeli style, isn't it? You know, I'll pick up something. There's good news and bad news. The good news is I give you a ride. The bad news is you have to go on the roof rack. Okay, so the actual definition brought in Shulchan Aruch is from Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel, in number 9, explains it as follows. That he actually was involved in the Chilul Hashem. Kagoyim. He brings an example of someone we're going to deal with right now, Elisha Acher, Elisha ben Avuya, one of the most famous, infamous heretics of all time. what did he do? Shehaya mitasek besifrei minim. He got involved in all sorts of heretical teachings, and not just that, v'shoyse b'minei zemeh. But he went out drinking and partying and clubbing as well. We see that the Greek music never left his house. I assume the Greek music was quite, you know, exciting and trendy. Greek, maybe Greek music. Although I must tell you, in parentheses, we once did a Greek theme for Purim once. And I got hold of someone who'd reproduced some ancient Greek music. I don't know how they did that, but it was apparently ancient Greek music from the 1st century BCE, whatever place. It didn't sound very party-ish to me. It was a bit strange, I must tell you, but it certainly set the scene. But anyway, what Elisha ben Avuya, he was dancing to this music. And the Shulchan Aruch paskens this halacha. And this is how we pass halacha. Isan ishmuani. If a rabbi is subject to rumors, kagan, shemit asek b'tzifri apikursen, that he deals with heretical books, v'shoyseh b'minei demeh, and he drinks, and he goes out partying in a way that rabbis should not, or shechaveirav mitvayshim minenu b'shem shemayim mitchalel al yado, or his rabbinic colleagues are embarrassed by his behavior, which has caused a public desecration of God's name and Torah, Masham Timle, we must put him in cherem. He has to go. Ad she'orim alav, and the point is when people begin to say, Sharele Marid al-Aklani, as we see, may God forgive him for what he's doing. Now, so that's a bar. When a rabbi commits a chilul Hashem to the point that his colleagues are embarrassed by what happened, examples being heresy of some kind or inappropriate reading or views, inappropriate behavior, maybe in a sexual way is very, very clearly one of the examples. So Elisha ben Avuya, he checks all these boxes. He was a heretic and he was behaving inappropriately with women and with, so can we learn his Torah? Well, it seems obvious we can't learn his Torah. The problem is, we do learn his Torah. And now we need to complicate matters by putting in the question, so okay, fine, this rabbi has to be dismissed. But can we filter? Can we turn around and say, you know something? Okay, I'm not defending in any way the behavior. The rabbi was dismissed. But the book's a great book. Why should I take the book off the bookshelf? It's a great book. In its time, it was a classic. Should I not read the book? And here we see a more complicated picture. The issue of whether the rabbi should be dismissed, I think that's fairly straightforward, as we've seen, as long as we can define what the behavior is. But filtering is more complicated. Look at this very beautiful, interesting Gemara. It's quite long. I've given you the whole quote here in number 11. The truth is, the whole thing takes pages. But let's have a look. It's the story of Elisha ben Avuya. Some of it is more famous to people than the previous Gemaras, but let's look together. Number 11. Tana Rabbanan. Maaseh ba'acher. There was a story that happened with Acher. Why was he called Acher?
Because he left.
And people recognized him, and they said, ooh, that looks just like Elisha ben Avuya, who was, of course, one of the leaders of Torah Judaism in the time of the Mishnah Tanaim. And then they would see him breaking Shabbos, and they'd say, oh, no, it must be somebody else. It can't be him, because he's Elisha ben Avuya, the Tana. It must be Acher. It must be some other guy. That's why they called him Acher. Sadly, it wasn't some other guy. It was him. Acher, shehay roichev al asus b'shabbos. He was riding on a horse on Shabbos. V'haya Rabbi Meir mahalech acharav. And Rabbi Meir, who was his loyal student, was walking behind him. Lil mois Torah mipiv. It even says mipiv. It's the words that we've seen in Malachi, mipiv, mipiv. He was learning Torah from him. Amalai, at a certain point, Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, who was breaking Shabbos, you're not allowed to ride a horse on Shabbos. Amalai, why? That's a whole different discussion. Riding a horse on Shabbos is a rabbinic prohibition, in case you come and schlep something off a tree to give the horse a whack. Although I would say to you that in the world of the Sadducees, which is related to this whole discussion, riding a horse on Shabbos in the non-halachic sect was considered to be a chilul Shabbos on a Torah level. They would execute people for riding a horse on Shabbos. Very interesting. But I'm not getting into that. Now, riding a horse on Shabbos is not just like any other, you know, he picked up something which was mukta. It's a serious prohibition. So he was riding a horse on Shabbos. Amalei said to him, Meir, chazol acharecha. You can't go any further. They've reached the end of the tchum where you can't walk any further on Shabbos. Shekvar she'asiv ve'ikvei susi. I've been measuring how far the horse has been going. Because, you know, he may be a heretic, but he's a Talmudic heretic. So he's always, you know, working it out. Ad kan, Tchum Shabbos. This is the end of the Tchum Shabbos. This is the limit of how far we can go on Shabbos. Meaning, I don't care, because I don't keep Shabbos. I'm going to ride off into the sunset. But you have to turn back. And then I've missed out the whole conversation, because Rabbi Meir says to him, so if I turn back, maybe you can turn back, maybe you can do tshuva. Okay, that's a different conversation. So the Gemara now asks, but Rabbi Meir, Heichi gamo Torah mipumei d'acher. How could he possibly learn Torah from this man? He's a disgraced rabbi on every definition. He is the paradigm. He is the prototype of the disgraced rabbi that we saw in Paskin and Halacha, and yet Rabbi Meir was loyal to him. He learned Torah from him. How could he do that? Bahama, Rabba Bahama, Dirt Khana, didn't we learn? We saw in Moed Cotton, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mike Siv, why does it say Kitiv say Koyan Yishmurdah, but Torah Mivakshav Piyu, Shmelach Hashem Tivakot, who? Im Doime Harab, Lamalach Hashem Tivakot, Yivakshav Torah Mipiyu, Im Lav Al Yivakshav Torah Mipiyu. I'll say that quickly because it's what we just said before. Doesn't your rabbi have to be like a malach? Elisha ben Evuya was not like a malach. I mean, not like a good malach, anyway. I'm a Reish Lakish. So Reish Lakish answers, no. Rebbe Meir Kra Ashkach V'Dorosh. He found a pasuk. Now we'll have to see what that means. He found a source. He relied on a source to keep learning these books. And he learned it as follows. What was his source? Hat, source from Mishlei. Hat Aznacha Ushma Divrei Chachamim. Listen carefully, says Mishlei, to the words of the rabbis. The Libcha Tashid L'Da'ati. But turn your mind to me, says God. Listen to the rabbis, but make sure that you follow me. Says the Gemara, what does that mean? L'da'atam lo ne'ema. It doesn't say, listen to them. L'da'ati says, listen to me. Meaning, you can learn from the rabbis. Yes. Hat aznecha l'divrei chachamim. Learn from everybody, but when they start behaving badly, don't learn from their behavior. Learn from me, even if you're learning the Torah from them. And similarly, Rav Chanina, gives another posse that you can filter, you can learn from disgraced rabbis. Shimi, ba, uri'i, v'hati aznech. Listen to me, says the posse in Teleman. Put your ear out, v'shichchi amech, but forget your people, u'bat avich, and forget your father. Meaning, again, he's learning, you can learn from people's Torah, but sometimes you have to then turn a blind eye to the way that they behave. So the Gemara is not happy with this. Kashu Krai Ahadadi. We have a clear conflict. The Gemara in Moed Katan said, your rabbi has to be like a malach, and if he's not like a malach, don't learn from him. And these other sources here seem to be saying, nobody's a malach, and if the rabbi teaches good Torah, so learn the Torah, and if he doesn't behave right, okay, so, you know, filter. How are we going to answer that? So the Gemara says, like Kasha, it's not a problem. Ha, the godl, ha, the cotton. What do you mean, have a godl, have a cotton? If you're a godl, if the person learning the Torah is a gadol, whatever that means, we'll see someone who's able to filter, so maybe that's okay. But if the person who is learning is a katan, it doesn't mean older and younger. It means more or less advanced in being able to read that. Who is able to pick up Aristotle and learn Aristotle? Who is able to learn the New Testament and get something worthwhile out of it, and yet be part of the, or that's a good question, right? If you go to different courses in Orthodox institutions in different places in the world, if you're learning certain courses in rabbinic polemics and things like that, you have to learn New Testament. You have to learn sources from here and from there. Who is able to do that and who is not able to do that? So the Gemara here seems to say, have a godl, have a cotton. You have to know who you are. If you're able to filter, then okay. But if you're not, you better have a rabbi who's a malach. Kiata Rav Dimi Amar. Rav Dimi came along and said, Amri b'mar Rava, they say in the West, which is Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Meir achal tichla, Rabbi Meir ate the fruit, v'shada shichla lebra, and threw the pits away. He threw the stones away. He was able to eat the fruit and throw away the stones. He could do that. Darash Rava. Rava also darash means the following. Maidichsev, why does it say, El ginat egoz yoradati lirot? It says, Posik in Shir Hashim, I went down to the nut garden to see the nuts. And the Gemara says a slightly strange thing for our ears. Lama nimshalu tamid chachamim le'egod. Why are the rabbis compared to nuts? Okay, here it really means walnuts. Okay, and certainly not the way we normally think of the word nuts. But egod is a walnut. Why are the rabbis compared to walnuts? So he says, lama lecha ma'egud, just like a walnut. Afal pishem luchlach batit ubetsoa, even though it can be rolling around in the mud and covered in filth, ein masha betocha nim'as, the inner nut, you can crack open the outside and throw it away, and the nut inside is still clean and tasty. Av tamid chacham, afal pishas sarach, even so a rabbi, even if he goes off, ein torah nim eset. His Torah is not solid by that. Interesting. Very interesting. So the Gemara here seems to be taking a little bit of a different turn and saying, you know something, don't be so quick to take the books off the shelf, because maybe the Torah is still Torah. Next week we'll resolve all of this and we'll see how the modern day poskim rule on these issues. But then the Gemara turns the other way again. It's very, very conflicted on this. Ashkechei Rabba Barshila Eliyahu. Rabba Barshila finds Eliyahu Hanavi, always a handy person to find if you need to know what to do. Amalei, he said to him, Maika Aver Kodesh Baruch Hu. What does God do on this issue? What's God doing? Is he happy that Rabbi Meir's learning Torah from a heretic, or is he not happy? So look at what Eliyahu says. Amalei, I'll tell you what God's doing. Ka'ama shmaitimi pumaihu. To call the Rabbonon, he's quoting the Torah from all the rabbis. It's a very interesting idea that God reflects back in some ways the Torah that we learn is reflected back in God. I'm not getting into the whole hashkafic discussion as to how that works. But God is learning back the Torah we're learning from all the rabbis. Umipumi the Rabbi Meir loy ka'ama. But he won't quote Rabbi Meir. God won't quote Rabbi Meir. Why not? Amalei amai. He says, why not? What's wrong with Rabbi Meir? Because he learned from Elisha ben Avuya. And God won't quote that Torah. He won't quote the Torah of Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir's Torah is infected in some way, tainted with the Torah of Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya. And God doesn't want that Torah. Amalei, so he said to him, Amai, that's not fair. Rabbi Meir, Rimon Mas'a, Rabbi Meir was able to find the pomegranate, Tocho Achel, eat the pips of the pomegranate, and klipatho zarak, and throw away the peels. I mean, anyone who's ever picked pomegranates off trees, I'm always surprised. The pomegranates look terrible from the outside. You think, oh, that's going straight in the garbage, it's infested, and this and that. And you open it up, and actually there's a lot of very nice seeds inside. So why is God discriminating against Rabbi Meir? It's not fair. Rabbi Meir knows how to take the good stuff. Amalei, so Eliyahu turns around to him and says, you're right. Hashka ka'ama meya bini omer. Now God started quoting Rabbi Meir as well. Somehow he managed to change God's mind. And now God has said, you know something? Good point. We'll bring Rabbi Meir back in because Rabbi Meir knows how to filter. Again, leaving aside all of the theological issues as to what this is talking about, we're changing God's mind and getting God to quote this Torah, that Torah. I'm not getting into all that now. But you can see how, in a way, conflicted the Gemara is back and forth. Shouldn't we learn these issues of Rabbi Meir because he quotes the Torah of Acher? So let's see if we can put a little bit of a conclusion to this just for today before we take it forward next week. So turn over to page 4 for a second. Who is a Gadol and who is a Kohen? It sounds from the Gemara that if you're able to learn like Rabbi Meir, if you're able to filter, then that's good enough. Gadol, says Rashi, is Gadol hayodeya lizaher shelo yilmod masav. If you're able to read the books without being affected by the behavior of the rabbi, yochel lilmod Torah mipiv. Then you can learn from the books. So we'll see next time. Does it make a difference if I'm learning directly from the rabbi? Let's say a rabbi has been found to have behaved very inappropriately in different ways, and they say you shouldn't have any contact with him anymore. Is that because, well, I might pick up negative from his behavior or be affected or be a victim of his behavior? But if I'm reading a book, if I'm listening to an audio shiur, then maybe that's okay. I had an interesting personal situation. I have on my own website some recommended websites of other people. I've had a lot of Torah that I've come across over the years, and I put things on the list, and I don't update it that often. Every year or two I put other stuff off and take a few bits off. Somebody emailed me very indignantly and said, I went on your website, a young lady, I went on your website, and I saw on that website referred to, recommended in on your list, the website of a rabbi who has since been disgraced, which is true, and I hadn't thought about changing the list. How can you have that on your website when there are rabbis that say that you shouldn't listen to his Torah? Okay, I don't know what's happening outside here, but I'm sure they're building something good. And that's a good question. And I was a little bit conflicted. What to do? Should I take it off? Because not everybody said you shouldn't listen. Some rabbis said you shouldn't listen to his Torah. You shouldn't hear from his Torah. Not everybody, etc. And who are the people who are listening? Does it matter if men? Because this particular issue, he was disgraced in his relationships with women. But, like, he wasn't disgraced in his relationships with men. Does that make any difference? Or not? Or is the whole Torah just scrub it, etc.? And it's a very interesting question as to what to do. Should I leave it on the site? Should I take it off the site? Next week I'll tell you what I did. Okay? The Shulchan Aruch, I'll leave you in suspended animation if you like. No, not that. 14. Harav she'ein holech b'derech tova. So what is the Shulchan Aruch taskin? A rabbi who doesn't go in the right way. Afal pi shechachem gadol hu v'kol ha'am tzrichim lo, ein lomdin mimenu ad she'yachzor la'avotav. He uses the word lomdin. You can't learn from disgraced rabbis. Now one second. What happened to Gadol and Kohen? Didn't we just say in the Gemara, if you're a gadol, you can, and if you're a katan, you can't? Why did the Shulchan Aruch not mention that? Why did the Rambam not mention that? Why did they ignore what seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara, which is some people can filter, some people cannot filter? So the Shach asks this very question. The Shach, one of the later commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, he asked in number 15. I'm not going to go through the whole thing inside, but he basically asks, why did they miss out this distinction? He gives two answers. Answer number one is, maybe the Shulchan Aruch says, he accepts the distinction, but he says, you know what? There's no one today who is a gadol. If you think you're a gadol, then that's a proof that you're not a gadol, and everybody's a katan, meaning even though we follow the psak of the Gemara, that if you're a gadol like Rabbi Meir, yes, like Rabbi Meir, but if you're not like Rabbi Meir, then forget about it. That's why they never even mentioned it. And the Shach suggests maybe, alternatively, a second answer, maybe we don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. Maybe, how did the Gemara introduce Rabbi Meir? He said Rabbi Meir found a posik. He found a verse, and he learnt out a heta for himself. Yeah? Maybe that's not accepted in halacha, and he brings that as a second answer. The truth is that the later commentators don't like that second answer, for reasons that we'll see right now. I want to show you number 16. Number 16 is, I think you'll enjoy as a source. It's from the Brikei Yosef, who is the Chidah, who is about 100 years after the Shach, and he picks up on this second reason. And he says, okay, maybe the Rambam holds that we don't pass it like Rabbi Meir, that there's no distinction between the Kotel and the Gadol. But look at what he says in number 16. Ah! What can we say to this? The Rambam avid uvde benashe. The Rambam himself, the Lamad Chachmas Kitzonius, he learned all sorts of heretical works, the Rambam. And he's not embarrassed about it. The Rambam writes in the introduction to Shmona Prokim, he says, I didn't make any of this stuff up in Shmona Prokim on Pirkei Avos. I've got sources. Who are my sources, says the Rambam? Chazal, Gemaras, Midrashim, Aristotle, the Greek philosophers, the later Islamic philosophers of the Kalam, the Mutakalim. And he says, and you know, you can believe, you can accept truth from anyone that says truth. He says, I'm not concerned if the source is not one that is to your taste. If it's Emes, it's Emes. By the way, the Rambam, we'll see that Rambam next week, he goes on to say, and what if your audience is going to get upset that you're quoting this idea in the name of some Islamic philosopher? He says, so say that. So just quote it in an anonymous name. But don't get rid of the Torah. If it's an idea, if it's Chochmah, then quote it. Just, you know, amend how you're presenting it. So how can the Rambam do this? Ukasav gon lamorim rivash b'tshuva v'soy simen amem hei, deha Rambam samachal hadar Rebbe Meir. It must be that the Rambam rules indeed that if you are good enough to filter, you can filter. That's why in the beginning of the Mori Nevuchim itself, the Rambam writes, interesting, the Rambam himself quotes the same verse the Rebbe Meir quoted to justify that he learned from Elisha ben Avuya. The Rambam quotes the same verse to justify that he's able to learn from Aristotle and others. So we see the Rambam obviously holds this idea that you can filter if you know how. So then you can't anymore say that the Rambam doesn't hold by filtering. He obviously holds you can filter. So So the question goes back. So why does he indeed not distinguish in his sack between Gadol and Kotel? If the Rambam on his own action shows you that he did filter where he needed to filter. And he gives the answer that I think we're expecting. Maybe the Rambam held the Hada Amma B'Shav Hava Gadol Hava Kotel Lav Dafka Ela Be'inyin Shiyeh Gadol B'Chochma B'Dafka Rach B'Rabbi Meir. The Rambam holds that there's such a person who has the same brain as Rabbi Meir, but the Rambam holds that that's not you and me. That's him. The Rambam says that he can do what Rabbi Meir did, and therefore he'll apply that to himself, but when he comes to ruling in the halacha, he'll tell you basically you can't. Ashruach ba, shibalo bevarer, he can distinguish ochel for the food, the lav gadol b'shanu v'katan b'shanu, it doesn't matter if you're old or if you're young, these days we can't do that anymore. Because of that, he missed out the distinction, and he says basically none of us should be learning from these rabbis who have been disgraced, unless they're really like Rabbi Meir, or in his case, like himself, like the Rambam. The Rambam does this in many different places, by the way. The Rambam says in Hilchos Avodah Zorah, in the Mishnah Torah, there are books written by heretics and by idol worshippers. You're not allowed to read them. He quotes all the verses. You're not allowed to touch them. You're not allowed to read them. You're not allowed to learn from them. And in his letter to the rabbis of Marseille about astrology, he writes there about himself, I read every book by every idolatrous sect that I ever found in any library. I read them all. So believe me when I tell you about idolatry, because I know my stuff. Excuse me, I mean, didn't you just rule in the Mishnah Torah that these books may not be read, and then you quite happily say that in a letter that you read everything that's found that? Obviously the Rambam is a complicated individual. And indeed, Rav Avadi Yosef, before we get to the last part, Rav Avadi Yosef rules that today nobody is a gadol on these issues, and therefore they should not be learning from the Torah of these great teachers. And we'll talk more about that next week, about how today's poskim will deal with some of the YU poskim. Rav Shechter has a lot to say about this. Rav Willick has a lot to say about this. We'll see next week exactly how the modern-day poskim deal with this. Let's just deal with one issue at the very end, which is, what do we do with rumors? Anyone can accuse anyone of anything. So we see actually there are two fascinating tshuvas that I just want to bring your attention to. One is from the Rambam and one is from the Chatam Sofer. The Rambam's tshuvas actually were not known until the 20th century. They were discovered, as far as I'm aware, in the Cairo Geniza. And therefore none of the earlier authorities had access to the Rambam's tshuvas, but we do. And he has a fascinating question that's asked him. Look at number 18. So the following question was asked in his own time to the Rambam. Anu Shoylem, we are asking, Michesed Adonenu Or Ha'olam Morenu Rabbeinu Moshe Ben Rav Maimon. Obviously he was extremely adored and respected in his own time. Ma Omer, what do you say, Morenu Adonenu Yorum Hodo Harav Agadol Mofet Hador of Hila'om Mizrach Shemes Admavo? Okay. Al Ish, what do you say about the following man? Al Ish Mepursam. The Mizrach HaChazanut, this man is a Chazan of the Bet Knesset. Now Chazan doesn't just mean he sings nicely on Rosh Hashanah. Chazan Bet Knesset is like a gabbai. We'll see in a minute, well, there's a gabbai example given. Vahahu Talmid Chacham. And he's also Talmid Chacham. V'yata alav rinun. And rumors are going about him. She'ein ro'ui lahazkiro. And I don't even want to say what the rumors are, he says. But there are rumors. Avalok kamabo edut v'shnei edim k'sherim. But they've never been substantiated. They're just rumors. V'lo oivim, and he has enemies in the community. Of course, he's in public Jewish communal life. Of course he has enemies. I mean, what? They didn't even need to say that. Because the politics is everywhere. Even in Sephardi shuls, there's politics. Even though that might be surprising. Okay? Hayisruhu v'mitzrat achazanot. Should we sack him from his position? Imlav mahu chayav v'zeh. And if not, does he have to pay? It's obviously a monetary issue that they're concerned about. The imtid kaimalav ha'idot, and if we prove that he did something wrong, the kabel mashahu chayv adin, and he accepts that he did something wrong, and he says he'll pay. So then, ha'isrunu mimisrato achashin enash, should we still sack him after he pays the money back? Or maybe, okay, he can pay the money back and then he's reestablished. Imlav or not. The imed alav eid echad, and if only one witness comes along, mayase, what should we do? We've got this man in the community and there are rumors flying around and nobody knows, nobody can prove them. So look what the Rambam writes. Mashit tzarech leidav, kol amaskil chacham. He says, the Rambam says, every thinking person has to know, she'ein ra'ui l'sarev, l'hasriv, you can't remove shum bal mitzra mimitzrato, anyone. You can't remove anyone from a public position, biglal shmua bilvan, just because of a rumor. You can't do that. You can't destroy a person's life on the basis of a rumor. Afilu eino oivim, even if he doesn't have enemies. Umikal shekein im yesh bezot ha'ir, b'nei adam hason imot. All the more so if there are people who are out to get it. You can't act on rumors. V'gam im titkayim alav ha'idot. And even if you establish that the rumors are correct, ein ra'ui la'asiro, you can't just get rid of him in that way. Im kibel alav mashehu chayev, if it's a monetary issue and he agrees to pay, v'din she'ein mordim adam mikdushato min tadri gadol avad chazan haknesses. We don't remove people if they paid what they owe. Ela im kein avar aveira b'farhesia. Oh, says, but if he does, this is back to chilul Hashem. But if the man has committed a chilul Hashem, okay, that's a different thing. That we have to get rid of the guy once we've proved what has happened, once it's become established. V'ha'ish asher diber b'zeh ha'talmid. The person who accused this Talmid Chacham, midli she'ra b'einav, without having any real proof, Chayav nidui. It's not that the rabbi needs to be removed, but the person who's spreading rumors needs to be put into cheref. You can't have such a hefkeres where everybody's saying everything about everybody. He's a slanderer, and he has to be removed. And therefore, the Rambam says, of course we'll remove an individual if he's shown to have behaved badly. It's not he's talking about. But rumors, not acceptable. We can't just make accusations and then a trial by media, what we call today trial by media. Everybody jumps on the bandwagon and everybody sends in their, you know, two pennies worth, and it's not acceptable. That doesn't mean, God forbid, we should be covering up. But trial by media is not acceptable. And the Chasam Sofer has a similar case, which we'll read in number 19 here. Al davar gabay tzedaka. He's talking about a public collector in the community. Sheyatza alav kol. A rumor went out about him. Shenitpas im hanochrit, that he's having a relationship with a non-Jewish woman. Okay, this public figure in the Jewish community is rumored to be having a relationship with a non-Jewish lady. V'lo shavag ma'alasa, and he wasn't sacked. Should we have sacked him or not? Yafa asa. We did. It was the right thing not to sack him. She'ein lifsul ish. Lifsol ish, you can't denigrate, you can't cancel a person's position in the community. Al rinun, on rumor, v'kol v'amah. V'eil achzit hakol, ele v'eidim brurim, you need proper proof. V'eil har herachaz eklal uklal, you shouldn't just ignore it. If people spread rumors, you cannot believe them at all, until you establish that they're true. V'hine, and in this particular case what happened, achakach hoide, the guy admitted it, in the end. The law bush, and he wasn't embarrassed even. Shenichal beitzazer, kamapamim rachman letzan. Maybe ruumi begabasov. Immediately we removed him. Says the Chasam Sofer, of course. The minute it came out that it was true, the guy admitted it. That's it. He's gone. We're not prepared to cover up for him. But until it was actually shown to be the case, until it was proven in some way, then we would not act on simple rumor alone. And that's difficult because how much do you need to prove in order to say successful proof? If multiple people come forward with corroborating stories, there comes a point you don't actually need to aid him to come to a base in. There comes a point when you know that it's true. And the question is, who decides? And one of the issues on this particular question, on this particular subject, is who are the gatekeepers? Who are the people who actually supervise the rabbinic establishment? Because can the rabbinic establishment supervise itself? And that's one of the transparency issues on this question, which will maybe touch on next week when we talk about tshuva and reinstatement, because there are now bodies in different communities. For example, in Israel, there is in the religious Zionist community, there is a body called Forum Takana. Forum Takana, who have been involved in some very high-profile accusations, and in some situations, even before anything has come to trial, have said, we've looked into this, we've established that it is true, and as far as we're concerned, we don't need any criminal prosecution. This man has to be removed, or this woman has to be removed from their position. So there are bodies. The question is, do they work? Do we have them in America? Do we have them in England? Does it depend on which community? Are some communities better at transparency than other communities? I think we all know that that is the case. The question is, how can we improve that? So next week, Be'ezot Hashem, we will look at the following resolutions to these questions, and we will look at why specifically learning the Torah of a disgraced rabbi is a problem. What is the issue? Is it personal contact only, or is it written material? Is it before or even after? We'll talk about tshuva and reinstatement, etc. And then we'll look, which I think will be the most useful of all, at how some contemporary rabbis have actually dealt with this, lemaisa, in practice, and we'll resolve this issue. And maybe we'll look a little bit about not just rabbis, but other community issues where there are people accused of different things. Okay, until next week, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you then. Ha ha.